Blog Talk Radio.
For the opportunity to get together with two other gentlemen and share provocative talk from a male's perspective on love, life, and relationships, you know we're going to shoot for an honest self-evaluation. If we don't, I'm going to have a problem. I just may have a problem if we ain't coming close to that. And we can't allow this either. Can't shy away from some things that need to be said when you put all of that together. Myself, Mark Elliott, Mr. D. Maurice, Mr. Charles, we're going for Black Men Talk. Tonight we're going to discuss a couple of things, lay the foundation out just a little bit. Communication is something I want to touch on, and you can't talk about communication enough. It's needed. Sometimes I'm not sure if we're doing it correctly, but who knows what's the correct way to communicate. So let's spend more time talking about that. Also, something happened a little less than a week ago around the N-word, so I want to invoke that into our conversation and bring that up and spend more time talking about that as well. Mr. D. Maurice, man, I got to say to you, bro, I did something today I haven't done in a long time, man, a long time, bro. I've made an appointment with myself to come home and watch New York Knicks play. Can you imagine that?
What happened?
Bro, they're good. They're good, but I fell into watching them a little bit Friday night. They were playing the Mavs, and Randall is playing out of his mind. Derek, the brother that was in Chicago, back with his coach, and I look at him, he got 26 points today. He's playing very well off the bench. You know, the young man they drafted the year before, he's playing. It's just, kids got him playing, man. I look at Derek Rose, I'm like, bro, you could have been playing all those years. Imagine where he would be right now. But yeah, man, after watching him Friday night, I made an appointment to come home and get him on 1 o'clock Eastern time. I was in front of the TV, and I can't say during the last time I've done that, bro. It felt good, man. So good. I'm not, Mr. Charles, man, I like him, but I'm so good. Just to kind of basically watch New York Knicks and have hope that they're going to win the basketball game. Because, you know, man, our hearts have been broken over the years. Sometimes I wonder who broke our hearts more, man, women or the New York Knicks? That's a question, bro. Because
The Knicks.
That's a pain that just stays there, man. I kind of never went away. It was just, oh, my goodness, man. Gentlemen, on April 3rd of this month, this young lady here turned 74 years old. Speaking of Jesse Hamilton. And for 14 years, she has many jobs throughout her lifetime that she covered. But for 14 years, she was the cook for the Phi Gamma Delta fraternity at LSU. Well, these cats got together that she cooked for throughout the years and surprised her on her birthday by paying off her mortgage. So I want to say happy birthday to her and salute the gentleman that gave back and took care of her mortgage. And I will say this, man, from time to time, I don't know about you two gentlemen, but I don't hear sororities or fraternities doing much, brother, other than throwing parties. I'm not trying to slam them. I'm just going to be honest with you. Man. They can throw some good parties. But stuff of this nature, the Northeast, I can't speak for where you two gentlemen are. I don't tend to hear anything. I know you two went to college, and I didn't. But I'm happy to hear that this fraternity got together and decided to take care of this young woman that she needs to take care of. And it's amazing at 74 that she even has a mortgage. That's even better. So now she can do some other things with her funds other than paying for the roof that's in over her head. Gentlemen, I want to throw out a quote that I came across, and I'll tell you who said it in a little bit, but it's something I want us to kind of spend a little time tinkering with. It says, relationships may change throughout the gift of time. Memories stay the same forever in my mind. When you hear that, Mr. D. Maurice, how does that resonate with you, sir?
I can agree to it to some extent, but I think sometimes, I fall into this too. We romanticize memories a little bit as time goes by add a little zox to the memory than what actually happened.
Man.
So we got to be careful doing that. And sometimes you put so much zest to it that you fall right back into that trying to make a, as one of my boys' mama would say, a memory of the memory and get back with the person. I don't know if you want to go that deep, but that's how it goes sometimes.
Whoa.
And realize that, hey, this wasn't cracked up to what it was then, and now it's even worse. So you got to be careful with that. Some you keep... Some you might put a little extra sauce on it, trying to, you know, sweeten it up over time and embellish a little bit. But, yeah, I can agree with that to a certain point. But, you know, you got to be careful with that.
I'll tell you one thing, bro. You keep your gloves up tight, my brother. You keep your gloves up tight. Ain't nobody serving uppercut on my cousin. There's nobody. Mr. Charles, religions may change throughout the gift of time. Memories, however, stay the same forever in my mind. How's it play with you, sir?
Well, I'm kind of with DeMaurice a little bit. I understand where he's coming from. You do have to be careful because you let something embellish. You get caught up in thinking you're remembering it a different way. And they're like, it wasn't all that. It was, you're like, oh, yes, it was.
Yeah.
So you got to be very careful. Yeah.
I did that? Yeah, you did
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 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 you did. No, I didn't. That was somebody else. Yeah, but no. Yeah, you had to be careful with that. But no, I can really concur with that because memories can stay forever in your mind to a point. But because some things are just so hard that you'll never forget, and you just go, wow, that was either horrible or it was great. Now, the great things you embellish a little bit, but the bad things you might embellish too. But, some things that happen that you would never, you always say that, yeah, that saying, there's something I will never, ever forget. Like they say, I can forgive somebody, but I never forget it. So, yeah, a memory is a, something else. It stays with you for a long, long time.
Yeah, man. I love memories, bro. Even the bad ones sometimes. I try to avoid, you know, bring them up and kind of go on through them. I love them because they take you back to a place of time. I don't allow myself to get caught up in them. I think that they're different than what they are, and they can kind of initiate something different because, you know, a memory is something that you can cherish and have. It doesn't mean that it's going to change your current day or change the future. But, yeah, man, I relish them, man. But, yeah, memories that stay in your mind forever, bro. And it's interesting because I look at memories not only in a relationship side of part. I just look at the memories that have of my parents that have gone on that live with me from time to time. And they're great things. Mr. Charles, I want to come back to you with this one, sir, because I've always looked at life like this. I mean, I wanted to always have a bunch of fond memories to cherish and carry, but I always wanted to keep my regrets to a minimum, if not zero. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe that's something other folks would think too, but for me, I always want my regrets small, but my memories large. How does that play with you, sir?
I think that's a great analogy. It's a great thing to try to do. Some people have it. It's hard, though, because a lot of people, they regret a lot of things that they didn't do or did do. Some people go, I wish I would have done this. I wish I would have done that, right? So it's hard. And I think sometimes when you say about regrets, you have to just, even when you didn't do something, for myself anyway, you just have to let it go, okay? Either that wasn't for you, or it wasn't meant for you to do. And as much as you can even say that about a relationship, you can say, if I had to go back again, I could have probably been married to this person or love this person. That could have been the one. But it wasn't meant to be. Wasn't meant to be. Because if it was, it would have happened. Something happened. But after a long period of time. But I agree with the analogy.
Yeah, keeping regrets down to a small number, Ms. DeMaurice, and basically really enjoying the memories. Is that a thought process you carry throughout your life?
Yeah, because you get to a point where if it didn't happen, it probably wasn't meant to happen. Because I know in my life, if it was meant to happen and I miss one opportunity, then another opportunity comes. But if you know, you never really want to regret. You want to, you know, remember the experience and learn from it. But, you know, you want to live a life with no regrets, and that you live life to the fullest, and that if things just didn't happen your way, then it was probably a divine delay or divine intervention that kept it from happening. And usually when that happens, I know for me, I see it later like, okay, if I would have went that way, it would have been bad. And it was good that this didn't happen because I went the other way, and I can see that this way was better. So sometimes it's a divine intervention that kind of keeps you from certain things or certain things in time. And so, yeah, I think that's a good philosophy to kind of just keep the regrets at a minimum and keep the good memories and things that you are doing and going forward with at, you know, the highlight of your life, and you keeping your eyes on it.
Yeah, that divine intervention is key, bro. That's a good point, because realistically, sometimes we spend a lot of times analyzing stuff that may go wrong and may not went the way we want it to go, not realizing that he may have something better for you. That's not what he wants you to have. That's not what he wants, the direction you want to go in. And sometimes at those points, you have to humble yourself, stand still, and realize that. And don't look at, you know, that it didn't work out. Just realize what's coming is will be better. And that tends to help you kind of move along and not sit there with the feeling of regret. I spoke of communication earlier. And communication to me, I remember years ago when relationships, when anyone would talk about relationships, they would say, when things weren't going right, well, you guys need to communicate. And that's true to an extent. But sometimes it's deeper than that. But communication, not only relationships, just in the fact of life to me, is really what can kind of basically take you from a point of things not working to a point of basically just bliss, bro, because we need to communicate at all times in certain ways in certain areas, and not necessarily communicate when we're just mad and frustrated and ready to throw our hands up, but when we do change to communicate, let's understand the magnitude of our words, understand what we're really saying, what we're trying to accomplish. And I found for me over the years, when I'm really trying to communicate, even at a point where things can be heated, I don't want to just basically say words to hurt your feelings. And I can, but if I'm pushed to that point, I have no problem doing that. But I kind of always mentally think of that as a last resort, in a sense, because if I'm saying something to hurt your feelings that's not basically based on what we're talking about, I'm not getting us to gain anything out of it. And that should not be a communication I should be having with you, a form of communication. I'm just saying something that kind of basically hurts your feelings. Not saying I haven't done it, but I always kind of let that try to be the last thing I go to. I guess there's levels of communication, and that might be the bottom level. But communication simply is important in exchanging of information. And what I found over the years, man, the exchanging of information, and you giving it there and it coming back to me, that seems to be where the problem occurred, Mr. DeMaurice. And why would that be the case?
Usually because one of the parties aren't listening. They already got in their mind what they're going to say or how they're going to respond to you, and they're not really listening thoroughly. Maybe the emotions are at an intense level where they can't hear you. And so it becomes a shouting match. It becomes, you know, I'm going to get one up on you since you got one up on me. And usually that's when the miscommunication starts, because people are caught up in their feelings. And instead of listening very carefully and not getting caught up in the emotion, they misinterpret it, or they hear a piece of what you're saying and take that to the left where you had no intention or going that way. But they take it that way because they don't want to deal with the truth or deal with what you're talking about or what you're trying to say.
Ooh, wow. Mr. Charles, it seems like the exchanging part is the part that, bro, you knocked it off the park, man. That ball's still transferring. I don't even like baseball, but that ball is still like. Snowball is circling Mars, man, as we speak right now, my brother, because what you said was right on point, profound, because people tend to get in their feelings and not paying attention and not listening. And what I've noticed, too, is that a lot of times when they bring conversation to you, they don't practice it. They done thought about it.
Yeah, it's already in their head.
Oh, yeah. It's like a script. They done put together, and they got to – there are certain points they got to hit, and it's not, there's no spontaneity to go along with the conversation where reacting to what you're saying. It's not even there. It's like a full Hollywood at that point. But coming to you, Mr. Charles, with this one, it seemed like the exchanging part is the part that seems to probably – cause the problems when communication is going back and forth, or communication basically started. And I'm just trying to understand, why would that be the case?
Well, I like a lot of what DeMarie said, but I think another part of it, too, is in exchanging information, we must realize that everybody doesn't receive information the same way, right, when it comes to messaging. And if I say something to you, you may not receive it a certain way, because some people need to be told things a certain kind of way. And that might seem far and bizarre, but I promise you, been there, done that. You know, people receive things different ways, or it can be different words. DeMarie and I had a discussion about this before. You can say words that mean the same thing, or you're just trying to be nice about something, and somebody else takes it a different way. DeMarie, you remember that take care discussion we had?
Yeah.
So I've been known to say, if you're leaving or whatever, I just say, hey, take care of yourself, or take care. Like, okay, until the next time. I was told, don't say take care. That means you're ending something. So
yeah,
I never knew that. And I was like, well, damn, I'm just saying take care. You know, take care means take care of yourself. Not I'm leaving you to hell with you. Goodbye. You're a bum, whatever. I can't wait. I don't want to see you anymore. But the point of it is, I think people receive information differently, messaging differently, and yeah, people get in their feelings, and I received that too, because I had to learn literally how to remove myself from a message and not take things personal, and actually listen first and then discuss, because it's easy if somebody's saying something that you don't like, and if it does pertain to you, you're receiving it as if they're saying this is true. You don't have a chance to debate it or talk about it. So that goes a long way. But I think that happens. That's the reason why the exchange of information kind of goes south.
Yeah, I think you really have to take your feelings out of it. I mean, I get that to an extent. If you say take care, and they think you're saying something different. But then again, that's really a play on words. And if you're taking that to me, in my opinion, different than other than just taking care, your feelings is already somewhere else. And you're trying to see if that's matching up with your feelings, because that's just kind of simple. But I think that ultimately you must remove, and it's hard, I'm not saying it's easy, remove your feelings from the communication and listen. You really have to listen and understand, and don't take it as something is being said to intentionally hurt your feelings. And I always look at, to me, when you have a discussion, I'm hoping that we both can gain something out of it. Like, here's something that will benefit me, hopefully be better to you, and vice versa. I think that's what, to me, a discussion should be. But with a discussion, you need two good communicators. And the good communicators listen more than they speak, which is interesting. Think about that for a second. If you're a good communicator, you actually listen more than you speak. And your aim is not to dominate the discussion. And I find a lot of times when I'm in discussions, someone is trying to dominate, in a sense. And it's almost like they're trying to win. Like you said a little earlier, Mr. Reese, they want to do one up. You might have said something that resonated, and they found to be truthful, but now they don't like the fact that you made that point. Now they're trying to come back and show you, instead of just basically taking the point, understanding the point, and dealing with it, now they're trying to come back and show you, well, you know, you said this, but this is this. Like you said, they take you off in a totally different direction. But also, a good communicator understands the balance of speaking and listening effectively. Now, with that being said, Mr. Reese, I'm going to come back to you with this one, boss, because I'm just going to ask, man, from your past encounters and relationships, would you say the majority you've dealt with has been good or bad communicators?
Man, I have I've noticed, and when I was reading this question, that when I was looking back at it, I've dated a lot of narcissists who will flip the conversation or try to flip the conversation to their advantage, which is not really good communication at all, because narcissists are always going to kind of flip the blame on you, or that, no, that's not what you really think. This is what you really think. And that's one of the most frustrating things about communicating with people. You're telling them what you're thinking. You're telling them how you feel, and they are flipping it like it's your fault, or that's not what you really feel, or that's not what is really going on. So it's almost like they're blocking the communication to their advantage all the time. So I not all the relationships or past relationships I've had were like that, but a number of them have been where they block the communication because it's something they don't want to hear, something they don't want to deal with. They don't want to be to blame for something. And what I've done, especially one I'm thinking of in particular, it was almost kind of breaking her down to make her communicate honestly. And once I did that and we got in some honest conversation, she put the guard right back up. It was like she got vulnerable for a second, and then I'm like, okay, now that explains blah, 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 blah. Bam, it went right back up. So it's been I've noted, yeah, when I thought about this question, I thought about not the ones that were good, because there are some ones that are really good, but the narcissists who really kind of will shun any kind of responsibility of anything they're doing, and that makes communication very frustrating with people like that.
You touched on something I want to go to after Mr. Charles come in, but communicating honestly. Because I think there's something strong about that right there, but I want to come back. I'm going to stick a pin in that and come right back. So, Mr. Charles, if you look at your past encounters and relationships, and we understand now what good communicators are, what they consist of, the balanced speaking of and listening effectively, you're not trying to dominate the conversation, per se. Would you say your past has been consist of good or bad communicators?
Wow. Probably good communicators for the most part, but when it was bad, it was bad. And I think this kind of is like a segue into what you're going to go into, because of the fact is that the honesty, right? Some people can't handle the truth. Some people cannot handle it. They'll say a lot of things, but you want to be honest, and that's why I think that they push away from saying it. It always is goes into that to be more of a narcissist, because it's like they want to let you know that it's your fault, and if you don't have the gall to kind of push back and say no, that's not the case, you can start feeling some kind of way like, damn, I really like her. Why am I not making this happen better, and why can't we become better or be better in a relationship? And after a while, you might start believing that crap. If you're not strong enough to understand that they're trying to pull something up on you. But the majority of mine probably have been decent, but it's hard to have difficult conversations. Communication was good, but I don't know why it's hard to have what we will call crucial conversations.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed. Answering the question first, I will say the majority have probably been bad communicators. And I say that because a lot of them tend to communicate to mislead or misguide you. And some of the misguided, I'm not going to say it's huge, but you ask a question, like didn't really say about the honesty, they won't give you an honest question. They will give you what they want you to know. And to me, that's not an honest question, an honest answer. And they think by doing that, you know, you just move forward and everything should be all right. But that's not a good communicator. And if you're sitting there always deflecting, defending, and trying not to really open up and be honest, how do you expect the relationship to grow and flourish? That I never just understood. That boggles the mind. But yet they want all this, but they can't even give and be part of a good communicator. Really is. What I found, too, is that it may sound strange to say, you know, push back, whatever the case may come, but I think a lot of times they want a guy to dummy down and just go along the flow. They'll say they want the strong, they want this, they want X, Y, Z, but when it comes to communication, they used to or they want the dummy down guy. Like you said, Mr. Charles, you kind of go along with it before you know you analyze yourself and you think, damn, I've done something wrong. And that's the circle of not really communicating and answering honestly. Because there's parts of them they don't want you to see that they're trying to hide, they're trying to really kind of, you know, send you on another route of the GPS. And that's where you get the misinformation, not being direct, not being honest. And it's like, again, how are you going to be that way? But yeah, you expect this to flourish and grow. And I think sometimes bad, poor communicating skills are kind of taught to certain individuals in a nonverbal way, meaning that they've seen it and they believe that's the route they should go. They've never taken time to stand back and think, wow, I need to do something different. I need to approach this differently. Even if they've done it in their past relationships and it blew up in their face, they're not going to take responsibility for the poor communication. They just think, well, it didn't work. It'll work this time. They keep it moving. So I'm wondering, Mr. DeMaurice, when I say here again, it almost seems like they tend to just what answer and not in an honest way, because they really, in a sense, want to kind of keep you at a length and kind of misguide you. But at the same time, they want you to dummy down who you are, even though they may claim that they respect who you are, what you present. But at the heart of it, I think a lot of women prefer a dummy down brother. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think some women maybe they do that. And when I spoke earlier about the narcissist that I came in contact with, it was to protect themselves from whatever. Maybe they didn't want to see who they really are and their fault in what's going on in relationships. So to protect themselves, they send you on a wild goose chase in communication, or just to protect themselves and protect their reputation or protect being hurt in certain situations or facing who they are. So they'll send you all over and blame anybody but themselves for what's going on. And so I think what happens to men sometimes is that sometimes we get to the point where it shouldn't be about winning or losing, but we get to the point where, well, I can't win this, so I'm just going to give up and just do whatever I got to do just to get through it. And so I used to hear men, and I probably said to myself, well, you can't out-argue a woman. Well, it shouldn't come to that point where you're out-arguing somebody or trying to win a battle or something like that. The truth is the truth, and it is what it is. So, you know, it's no winning or losing. Let's get to this point where we can deal with this and then move on is what we should be looking at. But I think some of our counterparts, as far as women, don't think of it that way. They think of winning. I want to win. I want the upper hand. And any way I can get it, I'm going to get it. And so that really, to me, it really kind of weakens the relationship, because now you got a partner who feels that he can't communicate with you. And so they're not going to come to you with a lot of things that they may be feeling or wanting to say. And then you leave the opportunity open for somebody else to come in and listen and be that you are not in that relationship. And I think we talked about a little bit about that last week.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because while you were talking, I was just sitting there thinking, and I was not sure about the dummy down. I'm not saying this is why I said the dummy down. I've seen it with other folks I've experienced. And I remember when the ex-wife and I were separated, and she said this to me, and I always remember this to be profound. She said, I felt like I always had to prove to you I was just as smart as you. I'm thinking to myself, wow. It made sense when she said it. And not, I wish you would have said that much sooner, much earlier. But think about it now, when the separation happens, now you come forth with this. And really, when she said it, some of the things, you know, like you watch Wheel of Fortune, and some of the things aren't lit. When she said it, everything lit up. You could pull everything back because it kind of just, some of the conversations we had, you could just tell it wasn't based on the conversation. It was based on you're trying to prove a point. And it just kind of made things clear. And it really just kind of opened things up and made things clear. And I said to Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles, that I think sometimes they kind of really want to dumb you down in order to be able to be around you. And it's just not that they don't respect initially who you are, what you represent, what you present, but they need you to be a certain way so they don't have to expose themselves or feel a certain way when they're around you. Your response, sir?
Yeah, I can concur with that. Some people just want to exist, right? They say they want to be happy. They say they want to be in love. But I think some people want to exist. So if you are in that manner of dumbing down in that area, you don't cause any friction, don't cause anything. You are together, have a good time, you hang out, enjoy your time together, and then you go off and you just keep moving forward, right? But there's no friction or nothing like that to really know who you are. But I agree with that. But I definitely agree with DeMaurice says about the fact that by keeping it a certain kind of way, you don't get the chance to really find out who that person is. Because I found myself in a position where I just wanted to kind of get along. And you might call that dumbing down. I just wanted to get along because I wanted to be with that person. But in truth and honesty, they never, those same people, some of them, never really have somebody else that challenges them. And what I mean by that is, it's like you don't just get to be correct, be the right person, right? You don't get to be the one that's always right or the one that has the knowledge. Sometimes you're going to have a grown-up conversation and really admit your faults. But many of these people, some of them I dealt with anyway that are narcissists, they've always been in the position of control or authority. They've never really had to look themselves in the mirror. But when I look back at it, I was like, well, hell, I wasn't a problem, not by myself. There's some issues with you that we should have addressed. Like you mentioned, Mark, about, you know, the situation, you know, with your ex-wife, about her saying that you always, you know, trying to prove something to you, right? I connected with a young lady, and we knew each other for years, and she would bring up from time to time, like I was holding something over her head because I went to college, right? And she'd always said, you always act this way, you act this way. And then she would always say, well, I'm going to college now. And when she got her degree, she's like, I got my degree just like you. And I was like, I never said anything about you going to school. You would never even know I went to college unless you asked me or you came to my house. But I don't know why certain individuals feel like they need to be on a certain level. I never understood that because when we connected, I accepted you for who you were, not what you were going to be and looking for somebody else. I said, that's something that you came up with, not myself.
Yeah. I'm going to twist it just a little bit because I've noticed this over the years, too. Maybe, you know, sometimes when things happen to you, you go, I'm just the only one. You know, I'm just the only one. No one else experiences but me. Just me. Just me. I'm only one experiencing, but that's not the case because you're experiencing, guess what? There's a bunch of folks experiencing the same thing. But you say something. You have a conversation. And in that conversation, you may say a sentence or two, Mr. Charles. And I know you said earlier, sometimes people they interpret things or things different that may carry on. But you may say, you know, it's going to rain tonight. And they say to you a little later, when what you said wasn't really kind of received, they say, well, I thought you said X, Y, Z. If I say something to you and you hear it, how could you thought I said anything else than what I said? So how does that work in translation, if you can elaborate and tell us about that stuff? Because I've experienced that quite a bit. You say X, Y, Z,
well,
and I come back later and I thought you said. And that one, even when they start to say that word, I thought you said, it's like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah. Initially, I would say, well, maybe they didn't hear me or so they were too busy with something. But part of it is, I can say this now because I'm removed from those situations, they just wasn't listening, bro. they wasn't listening. They were not listening. I'm telling you. Okay, so real quick. I had a friend that was going somewhere, and she asked me if I wanted something. I said, no, I don't want anything. But I specifically asked him something because he was traveling. And it's, oh, you going over there? Can you get me this? And she comes back with something totally different. I'm like, you weren't fucking listening. I couldn't say that then, but I'm saying it now. You weren't listening. And when somebody says that, they're not paying attention. I know people get busy. And then it's like, if you say something back, then it's like, why they're looking at you crazy, like, why you got an attitude? It's not that big a deal. Well, it's a big deal if you don't pay attention. If you cannot take enough time to listen to me, why the hell are we even talking? Because let something happen that's important to you, then I got to be all on radar, all this and that. But me, you kind of blow it off, like, oh, it ain't that big a deal. But let somebody else come to you with something. You make sure you get that right, but the question comes back to the relationship. And not to throw it off track, but too much. But what do I really mean to you then? Where am I at in your pecking order?
Mr. DeMaurice, let me just say this, because I thought DeMaurice knocked it out of the park and was floating around Mars, man. You got that floating around Jupiter. I want to come back to something you said in a little bit and ask, but I want to bring Mr. DeMaurice on this, because realistically, I thought you said. If you experienced that, Mr. DeMaurice, how did that make you feel?
Well, I experienced where folks would say, well, you meant to say this. No, I said it the way I wanted to say it. So what happens is, I think, is I'm going to put this in baseball terms, too, since we've been floating that around. Usually when a pitcher pitches a ball and the catcher knows that it's not going to be a strike, what he'll do is frame the pitch where it looks like a strike. So usually what people do is they frame it in such a way, they frame it to respond the way they want to respond and not the way they need to respond to a question. So they frame it to what they already kind of preconceive, how they're going to answer something or how they're going to respond to something, and they frame it and take your words and twist it and frame it right where they want it instead of right where you put it. And so that's where the miscommunication comes in. And you say, well, no, I didn't say that. This is what I said. No, this is what you said, such and such and such. And it just makes it complicated. And now you're in another argument about what's being said. And so instead of dealing with the situation at hand, it's kind of redirecting the argument somewhere else instead of the spot it's supposed to be at. So I see that a lot. I see that a lot. And it gets to a point where you go, you know what, I'm done with it. So you're not going to try to understand it. I'm not going to spend another whole hour trying to get you where you need to be so we can deal with the situation. It's obvious that you don't want to deal with the situation. So I'm going to leave it.
Dummy down. Dummy down, my brother. That's the dummy down process. And that's not communication. That's misleading, bro. That's not communication. It's misleading. It really is. But, Mr. Charles, you know, I want to come back to you with this, because what you said makes you wonder where you are in the pecking order. And this may sound simple, but it really isn't. Because to me, by doing that, it shows a sign of lack of respect. I feel it does. So I'm going to ask you, Mr. Charles, when that's happening, or when it has happened to you, do you feel like them not really taking the time out to understand and just listen and focus and give that to you, because I'm sure you give that to them and give it to others. So when they choose basically not to really take time out to listen and hear and focus, is that a pure sign of a lack of respect?
I can see that as possible lack of respect, but for me, it's more of you don't care. You just don't give a damn. You don't care. It's not important enough. Because if something was important to you, then you would care. You would show. You would. You. It shows that you care. You take time to say, "Hey, I care about that." They might. It might be a point of disrespect, but you. I mean, I guess my point of it is, people that don't know you or don't even think anything about you can disrespect you, right? But the whole point of caring is, if we're in a relationship or connected or whatever it may be, do you care? What do you care? How you feel about me? We going along as if we're together or whatever we're doing. But when you do that type of thing, it shows me that you don't care. So what the hell are we doing? That goes further for me, because it's like, why are we even doing this? We're just friends, and let us be friends. But let a man try to, I'm not going to put a gender on it, but hell, as a man, let a man do something like that where he don't care, he doesn't remember, something like that too, and then all hell breaks loose. That's why I never understood. I guess I'm not crossed that threshold yet. I never understood why some women don't understand that, hell, men's birthdays matter to certain men too. Hell, Christmas gifts matter. Don't nobody want no group by Fabergé all the damn time. Shit, soap on the rope, all that bullshit. I mean, messed up socks and ties and shit. We want some nice shit too. You know what I'm saying? Or don't buy me shit. That's what I'm looking at. You got the kids going up in here looking in Sears and Roebuck magazines and shit, buying the same shit for the last 5 years. And you got the stuff in the closet. Here's daddy's present, English leather. Boot by Fabergé, man. Get the fuck out of here with that. You know what I'm saying? Shit, you ain't going to never use. Shit, for real? Anyway. I ain't bitter.
Oh! Mr. DeMaurice, is it a lack of listening, non-listening? I would answer this one, man, because to me it is. It just is, man. It's like your focus is not there. And as Mr. Charles said, if we were to do the same, it's a totally different ballgame, bro. Totally different ballgame. So to me, I'm looking at it as a sign of respect, and I respect what he's saying, and I think it's the same thing, too. It shows a sign of that you don't care enough. I'm not going to say you don't care, but you don't care enough to really pay attention and focus. Because it's something simple. It's nothing huge, but sometimes the simple things matter to us. And a lot of times that's taken for granted. But is it a sign of a lack of respect, sir?
Yeah, I can see where it could be a lack of respect. But what I often find out is that it's not about you. It's about them. This ain't got nothing to do with you. It's about me. It's about how I feel. It's about what I want. It's about what I need. It ain't about you. And so when you get to a point in a relationship where you figure out that, you know, it ain't about your wants and needs. It's all about hers, and you're in the wrong relationship. You know, so whatever you do, whatever you say, doesn't mean anything if it's not going to benefit me in the long run. And so that's where I found my situation. You know, regardless of how you feel, regardless of what you said, regardless of what you want, it's about her. It ain't about you. And so everything that is done in that relationship is not about you. It's about her. And I think we were talking after the show last week, the sports show, about being traumatized. That's where I got to a point where I was doing, and my buddy was saying, you know, welcome back, because everything that I was doing, it wasn't about me anymore. It wasn't about us. It was about her. It was about trying to appease her. And doing things that she wanted to do, and doing things that made her happy, bump me. I ain't even in the equation anymore. And so it got to a point where I wasn't doing things that was good for me, and I was doing everything in my power to do what was good for everybody else. And the wake-up call I got where I changed that mindset is when I had a regular doctor who I'm not sure where he is now. I used to go on a regular checkup when I was in grad school, and he was like, listen, man, your blood pressure is getting borderline. So if you don't get the stress away from your life or put down some things that's stressing you out, I'm going to have to put you on these pills. And that's when I got the wake-up call that, man, I've been neglecting me. And all this process, it ain't been about me at all. Working, going to grad school, taking care of two kids, it wasn't about me at all. It was about, you know, the one sitting at home with no job, and I'm busting my ass trying to make things happen. And so I'm like, okay, all right. I did the same thing Spike Lee did and do the right thing with the mayor. Got it, gone. And that's when I started putting the plan together for a divorce. Because now it wasn't, you know, the relationship wasn't working on our behalf. It was working on your behalf.
I want to come back to you, sir, and ask this. How did, you know, we hear, and I was, you know, knowing you at the time when you were married, actually I came to visit you, bro, time or two in Chicago. Yeah, and I knew you was traumatized, though. When you said that the other night, I was like, damn, okay. I missed that, but I will say I want to ask this: is that how do you, looking back at it now, how do you think it got to the point where it became all about her?
That was the whole, to me, that was the whole business business plan in the first place. And from her perspective, it was a business deal, and this was the business of putting her into a different status, a different light. A different way of how people saw her. And so you started noticing that, oh, we got to go here. Why do we have to go here? What do I have to do with this? It was appearances, to keep up appearances, things of that sort. And so when I look back at it, it wasn't about me. It was about the presence of having a husband, the presence of having a family, how that looked in certain circles. That you wanted to impress folks. You wanted to have a husband that was from the University of Chicago and who did this and was doing all this stuff. And it got to a point where it's like, you know what? You felt like you were being used. You felt like you were being used. All the while, when she figured out that things weren't going well, oh, I'm going to put the blame on him now because I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. He ain't doing what he's supposed to do. So I'm going to put the blame on him. I'm going to make him the villain. And I remember you saying this when we had a conversation. We went outside and talked in the car. and you were listening to some things you were saying. He was like, bro, that ain't you. He said, the man she described is not you. I know who raised you, and that ain't you.
Yeah,
and you like, I want you to know that. I want you to know that I see right through that. And I needed that. I needed to hear that from some, because it was like when I was around other people, it was like, you know, it was like this. I used to come in sometimes. She was there with her girlfriends, and then everything, all the conversation stopped. I was this big bad monster coming up in my house, and it was like, just ain't, you know, I ain't no big bad guy, I ain't no big bad monster. You know, why y'all stop talking? What was you talking about in the first place? You know, I ain't beating her, I ain't doing all this other stuff. But it was the image that, okay, if this ain't working, I'm gonna shift the blame to this one so that I can still look like I'm in a great light and it's all about me and it's all about this kind of status that I want and how I want people to look at me. And that's what I start seeing. It wasn't about us. It was about how do I make this situation, from her, in my eyes, from her standpoint, how do I make this situation look like I'm the good guy and he's the bad guy? Now that it's not working, it's falling apart, he's about to leave. Now how do I make him the bad guy so I'm still looked upon as the victim or the person that could do no wrong in this situation? And so in the relationship, you just started to see that. Like everything you did was like you were the villain. I'm like, wait a minute. Working every day, I'm studying, I'm doing all this other stuff. When do I have time to be a villain? I'm shopping, I'm washing the clothes, I'm doing everything. Like I got a roommate. Basically, but the image from her friends, family, whatever, was I was this rotten guy. and you just figure it out that, you know what, I wonder what they think. Sometimes I wonder what they think now. I'm out of the equation. So she's the only one there. Is she still blaming me? Blaming somebody. Who was to blame after that? So that's what I start to see. Hopefully I answer the question. That's why I started to see that. It's not about me. It's about the energy trying to kind of give out there that I'm this horrible person that's doing all these horrible things. And you know who told me that this was going to happen? The odd thing about this, me and her ex-husband had a great conversation. As a matter of fact, a couple of conversations. And he said, you know what, bro? Because she was painting him as the villain. And I'm like, let me sit down and talk to this guy. Because he calls the house, they're in arguments. So I said, let me sit down. We sat down and talked. He's like, man, I'm so glad you sat down and talked. Because, I don't get a clear understanding of what's going on through her. Because I was telling him, like, man, anytime you want to call your daughter and talk to her, I don't mind. Anytime you want to pick up your daughter, I said, you know, you can't run this household. I can't run your household. But be rest assured, bro, that I ain't abusing your daughter or anything like that. She's like my child here. And as far as I'm concerned, she got two dads, you know, a biological one and a father to her siblings and her. And so she got a lot more resources. That's the way I'm looking at it. And he said, you know what? He said, I appreciate that. We sat there and talked. He said, bro, there's going to come a time when things don't start working out. He said, she's going to try to paint you exactly the way she painted me. And I felt that. I felt that when it started happening. And quiet as kept, I don't think I ever shared this with anybody other than my attorney, but there was some shenanigans going on with the divorce. That's why she was stretching it out. And all of a sudden, my attorney got some mysterious papers from the first divorce. Because she tried to twist up a whole lot of things during the first and the second. And all of a sudden, he got a mysterious package from the first divorce. And I know it was him. Looking out. Looking out, bro. Looking out.
Yes, sir.
I'm like, damn. I was like, you know, me and D.I. were talking. DeJango was talking today. Look at God.
Wow. You know.
I'm like, wow.
You took it. Because, I was going to say myself, man, is that, I mean, looking back at that trip to Chicago, bro, I came to Chicago, you and I talked, God brought me there, bro. He just did. I mean, I was thinking that while he was talking, because I remember, man, we did what we did during the day, and, you know, everything looked so rosy and, you know, beautiful. And you and I went out. It was cold that night, too, bro. I don't even think I was dressed cold warm enough, but it didn't even matter. Only thing we missed that night was whiskey. And, man, it was just talking and unloading and what she was carrying. And that's one of the beautiful things I love about this show, too, because we get a chance once a week, man, to come up here. Mr. Charles kind of did it this evening, man, unload some things that we may have thought about the past, whatever. And in a no one judges and no one should judge. We hear. You know, and men need this, man. Men need the opportunity to basically be with other men and say some things. There's certain things that other men that can relate to, women just can't. If they don't want to, or the case may be, they just can't. And you need to have someone at certain times that you can talk to that can relate and understand what you're saying. But at the same time, if you're wrong, check you and tell you where you're wrong and so you can understand and make adjustments. But realistically, man, I was thinking the same thing. I mean, I came to Chicago. And of course, you want to visit, you want to hang out, you want to do things, but realizing that, you know, when I was there, I was brought there for a reason, man. I was brought there based on, you know, what you said. I said some things to you. I was brought there for a reason. There's a cat that I know, man, that I find interesting, that him and I worked together, I made him about 15, 20 years ago. And I may have said this before. I can't remember what I said to him. I can't even, if you were to tell me, Mark, I got $10 million, I'm going to give this to you. Just tell me what you said to him. Bro, I can't tell you. But he has said to me, he's been married now for quite a while. He has walked up to me two or three times and said, Mark, you know, you are on point when saying this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm saying, Don, his name is Dominic. Dominic, I don't know what I said. I can't remember. But he said, no, I'm not real. He would start bringing stuff back. I said, yeah, that sounds like me, but I have no clue. And here again, when I think about it, that's God. That's him. Because he will put people in your way and put people around you at times to allow you to basically look and understand and see what you need to see. And that's amazing, bro. That is utterly amazing. You know, thanks for sharing. Appreciate it. We're going to change gears here, in a sense, and move towards the N-word, in a sense, and talk about that. Because I found it interesting, and we all feel different. We all can feel what we want to feel towards that word. Some of us still use it. Some of us don't. But what I've noticed, and I think we talked about this before, I know we talked about it on the sports show, the NFL came out a couple of years ago and said they're not going to allow players on the field to use the N-word towards another player. So on display last week, the Lakers were playing the Brooklyn Nets, and I guess Irving and Shula, I can't think of the other kid's name, or the young man's name, got into a little tussle, and he called Irving the N-word. And he said, oh, you're not going to call me that. Upon hearing that, the referee stepped in and threw them both out of the game. So I guess quietly, the NBA has adopted a policy as well. That word is not going to be tolerated on the court. So, and I said this then, and I'll say it now. It's amazing how corporations like the NBA, NFL, whatever the case may be, say we are no longer going to listen to black people say that to other black people. Whether they're saying it or not in their offices, who knows? But that we're no longer tolerating. And that brings me to really the discussion. In a sense, they're saying they're no longer going to deal with it. They don't want to hear it. But what I noticed the day after that happened, you know, I had an opportunity to bounce around TV a little bit and watch some black commentators. Glad they're doing what they're doing. Glad to see black faces on television, always from. But some of them, there was one cat, Shannon Sharp, sitting across from Skip Bayless's wife. And you could tell Skip had a little uncomfortableness with it. But Shannon was really trying to explain to him how that word is okay to use it with another man. And Skip, you know, he looked at me, he's uncomfortable in his chair, he's moving around, he's like, you can just tell, just like, how could it be? And Shannon went on and back and forth. He's given all excuses. And what I found to be interesting is that Shannon's, one thing I found to be real is that he said that people, kids that are born after the 70s, they don't have the same understanding of the word as a kid that may have born in the 60s and beyond, and earlier. And when he said it, I said, okay, I'm trying to, you know, find some logic in it. But there is none, bro. Really, there is none. In my opinion, there is none. Because to me, the word itself goes back to our ancestors, the way they were treated, what they heard, what went down. So to me, when you think it's okay, it's just my opinion. I'm going to come to you two gentlemen in a little bit. But when black people try to justify it to me like it's okay now to use back and forth, it says to me, you don't give a fuck about your ancestors. You don't care. You don't care they lived a life where they heard that word routinely. That might have been the last word heard before they died. You don't care. You don't. But you don't want the people that did that, white people, to use the word. But you can take it, you mold it, and go back and use it in the way you want to use it for your own personal gain. But you just don't care about your ancestors. You don't. I don't give a damn when you were born. You could have been born 2 years ago. But that word plays a part in our history, and it's not good. In no form or fashion is that word good. I love the fact that Irving basically said, yeah, you're not going to call me that. You're not. And he came out the next day and said, why? But here again, Shannon wasn't the only one. Other cats on TV that day felt like they were more mad that Irving made it a point to come out the next day and say something and the media can talk about it. Think about that for a second. They were more mad that, you know, he made it out a big deal by saying that he should have just took them. They felt he should have took them, you know, getting thrown out of the game and keep his mouth shut. And there was a guy that's on Speak My Mind or whatever, young cat, Echo Aqua, whatever his name is, like the brother, nothing against him. He said, you know, he's showing white people that, you know, we're not on the same page. Seriously, bro? That's what you're thinking about. Here again. No one speaks when they favor using it with another brother. No one speaks about where the word goes to as far as our ancestors. And I can imagine much of our ancestors have turned over in their grave 1,000 times. 1,000 times. You could take that word and make it glamorous in rap songs. You could take it and make it glamorous in movies. You do all that. But it doesn't take away the pain and the horror that our people experience. I'm sorry if I got long with it, but I want to come to you, Mr. Charles, and just go, why does it seem like, you know, the day after, black people that were on television felt like the problem is not him saying the word. The problem is that Irving educated people on the word, mainly white people, why he doesn't want to be called that word.
Yes, a lot going on there. First of all, I know that certain people, unfortunately, use that word like a term of endearment. Like, what's up, my, you know, all that. And I'm like, wow. So I'm not one that really likes that word. I've heard people say it. I've, you know, probably been in that company. But then I made a decision to not be entertained by that word or entertain it in such a manner. But I think, like I said, this is a term of endearment. They've been having it for so long. And I think also, too, those people that say it like that, they really have not been connected with the pain of that word, what that word really means, and when it's said in such a manner that is really derogatory towards you, and that's usually coming from other folks. I don't think they really understand that. And maybe they do. Maybe they just don't care. I can see that, too. But if you are a person, particularly when you think about the ancestors, that was connected and you know what that meant, then and how they felt about it, then you would not be really running off using it. And like you said, with the whole point of the generational thing, kids have just not been taught about it. You know, there's a point now where they're saying that even white folks have been using the word with some of their younger friends. But then, too, you throw in the other play of the other aspect that comes into play, of trying to explain it to another culture, another race. They don't get it. They never will, certain ones. And they're not supposed to get it. And last but not least, I'll say this, that I understand where Irving was coming from. One, I mean, if you say this, kind of like, I wouldn't even say it's regular, good for barbershop talk. But we're in a business arena or whatever, where we're supposed to be professional, and then you come off like that? I mean, you can't treat me like on the street. We out here like this, too. We not out in the street. Not saying it's acceptable, but I understand why he was upset about it. Because, oh, boy, at that point, took it to the street. Now, if we're going to be street, then be street. But it was just, I understand it. But other people, and the other part, too, that I'll say this, the last thing is, when you say it like that, and then other folks come back and asking that question, what's wrong with it, you try to explain it, they think it's okay, or y'all don't know what the hell you're doing. They don't get it. They never will get it. They never will get it because they've never been in that position. And it's really sad that these commentators are acting like it's no big deal because those people are going to play off of it like, well, hell, Shannon said it's cool. Must be cool.
Yeah, sure, it was the guy's name that said it. I couldn't think of his name before. Yeah, I just don't – I don't get it, man. I just don't I don't get it. I just don't, you know, here again, we all have choices. We choose to not, but I don't understand. I'm going to put this thing, Reese, because you understand what took place. And like I said, I threw Shannon out there. I do Echo. There was a few others. But they were more concerned and mad at the fact that Irving took the role he took and went further. And I'm like, seriously? So if you can make sense of this, bro, or, you know, add your perspective, we'd love to hear.
I think it's a miseducation, and I say that because I do teach, and especially with the younger generation, when you're teaching, I find myself, and I said this Saturday at a meeting I had yesterday evening, I find myself not only teaching the subject matter, but given history lessons, and it's scary if you're in front of college students, the lack of education they get in the high school level, in the grammar school and high school level about history, things they don't know, things you have to explain why it's not appropriate to do this and why it's not appropriate to do that. Where this particular thing comes from, where this word comes from, where this phrase comes from. That, you know, sometimes people will say phrases, and it's constantly not only just educating them on the subject at hand, but giving them a history lesson or a frame of reference to where this is coming from so that you understand why people are offended by you saying this or saying that, or why you should question when people are saying this and saying that. Also, there is a, you know, in different parts of the country, man, the vernacular, how people talk, how people, what people say, the words that they use are different. You know, you go from New York down to the South, come to the Midwest, California, and in order to kind of navigate your way and code switch to what people are kind of saying and what they mean and things of that sort, you have to really kind of get a flavor of what's going on. I was watching this documentary on code switching with Black folks and Black language in the United States, and one of the things that was pointed out in the documentary was that if you're in the South and you go, you know, what's up, that's like saying hello. But on the East Coast, if you say what's up, that could lead to a fight. Like, what's up with you? And that exchange can lead into a fight. So I think it's a lot of miseducation. It's a lot of how we're going to kind of really handle this as a society and get on one page and what's really appropriate and what's not appropriate. And you got folks who we're not on the same page with certain things as far as language, what's offensive, what's not offensive. Hell, you still got sports teams using derogatory names towards other people. You know, Native Americans or First Nations people. So, and they don't see anything wrong with it. So we got a lot of work to do as far as helping people really understand history and get rid of this miseducation when it comes to historical events that link up to very, very harmful words and harmful phrases toward different nationalities.
I'm just going to say this, man. I don't think there's no education to be done. You can say nigga in New York, it's going to be the same way if you say it in Chicago. It's going to be the same way if you say it in Los Angeles. No matter where you say it, it's a word, bro, that shouldn't be said to represent Black people, what Black people endured and what they felt to this country. Seriously. I mean, it is what it is. It's just exactly, there's no college course, there's no training, has to be no education. If you're a Black person in this country, you know anything about the way Black people treat this country, you ain't even got to think about the past that much. That word should kick you around your front teeth. It should. But let me just say this. It's been glamorized. Now, who do you think glamorized that word? Realistically. Black folks have. Why people didn't take that word and make it popular? They only used it when they felt frustrated. They wanted to basically hurt our feelings. Black people took that word and glamorized it. Movies, music. Here again, they don't give a fuck about the ancestors. If they can make a dime, they didn't care. That's where the glamorization comes from. And the cats that aren't willing to step away from the word, they've been using it for so long, they don't want to change. That's how arrogant they are. I love Shannon Sharp. I love him. But that brother don't want to stop using the word. Because when he gets his boys, when he's drinking his yak, he's smoking a cigar, they say it 100 times, he said it. And Shannon Sharp has done very well for himself. So what's Shannon Sharp give about somebody 100 years ago that was whipped 100 times? What does he care about that? What does he think about that? So, I mean, there's no education that has to go on. You just got to know. But I'll just say this as a race of people, we cut our linkage from our past fast in a hurry, bro. Fast in a hurry. We do, because we don't want to think back those days. And I think one of you said it, because we don't experience nothing like it. So you don't, our parents dealt with this. We don't walk up to a water fountain and it says colors only. We never seen it. You never used it. You never head to a bathroom and your parent or somebody had to push you to go to another one. We don't do that. These cats, they can walk into Starbucks, and they can treat them like shit, but they got the opportunity to go in there and drop their dollars. They don't know nothing about that. And it's not because of lack of education, because they're living their lives. But I say this, that word get tossed around like, hey, it's mm-mm. And if they don't know it, it ain't the school's fault they don't know it, bro. That's their parents. Anywhere in the world. It ain't like the 50s been 3,000 BCs ago. Don't blame the school system for not telling them about what they need to know. There should be no black person roll around this country who have an idea what that word means to black people. But, yeah, if you listen to rap all fucking day, you wouldn't. You really wouldn't. If your mom and your daddy playing that all day and that's what you hear in the song and it sounds glamorous, why would you? You wouldn't. You would think it's nice. You think it's okay. So there's no re-education. There needs no re-education to go on for that. Black people need to really stop being stupid when it comes to us. And here again, we don't want to die. We don't make any change. We don't. Mm-mm. It's okay. So if you grew up past the 70s, guess what? You signed a waiver. You can say it. And what type of dumb shit is that? I mean, realistically, name me the white word. Name me the word. We don't have a word for white people. We don't. But name me the word where we signed a waiver no matter when you were born. Oh, cracker. So if you was born in the 60s, you could say cracker. If you was born in the 80s, you can't say cracker? What type of... I'm going to say this, then we're going to kind of get off this, man, because it does something to me. It just does. But I'm coming to you with this, Mr. Charles. The N-word itself, when we kind of, you know, when it's tossed around and thrown around, and this is just a psychology thing in the back, is that a word that how we view ourselves, and that's maybe a reason why it's used so much from one black person to another?
For some people, yeah. Some people, yeah, that's how they see themselves, or they think that's how it is, and they see themselves in that manner. But I think some people say it because they're trying to be cute. Like I said, I've seen some people say it around white folks and act like it's no big deal, and they using it, and you can tell the white folks are uncomfortable. You know, that whole thing, yo, that's my, you know what I'm saying? That too, and I definitely don't do that. But, no, I think that's how people might see themselves, and they have no clue. So if you see yourself like that and use the word, what do you think the people outside your culture are thinking about you? Not like you give a damn anyway, but I'm just saying.
Well, with you, then, you knocked that one out. Mr. DeMaurice, it's easy for us to use it against each other because we see ourselves as being that anyway.
I don't know. I think I think sometimes people get power to words, and people use it and don't give power to it as a, you know, just something to say, or and not really having any meaning that or derogatory meaning behind it. And I think that's a issue too, that some people say it with a derogatory meaning behind it. Some people feel that I don't have no derogatory meaning behind it. So I think people just give, I mean, it depends on who gives power to the word and how the word affects you. And so I tend not to give power to the word. A lot of words I just don't give power to and just don't react to because I know who I am and I know whose I am. But some people may not. Some people may. And they give power to a word. They say it. They do it. They, you know, they may act upon what the word really means, and you know, I think it's just based on the person and the people who use it.
We'll give power to our first question of the night, sir, coming from the panelists. What you got, man? What you got?
Power to it. Are you still easily embarrassed? Are you easily embarrassed?
No, bro. I can't be, man. I'm gonna tell you something, man. I've done this numerous times. It should embarrass me, but it doesn't. Maybe I'm here again. It might be something I always do. When I leave the house in the morning, most of the time my zipper is down, bro. And I don't know why. It's been this way for years. I cannot. I can't remember to zip my zipper up, bro. So if I was gonna be embarrassed about zipper, embarrassed to even live with me. Somebody said, "People said you're talking things, bang, it goes up." I know I can't even. I don't even know how to fix it, Mr. Charles. You answered the question, sir.
Sometimes, but not as much as I used to be. I'm more or less mad at myself because I let it happen. It's like, damn, say that to myself. The hell? And all you can do at that point is just fix it. But there's nothing you can do about it. But, yeah. Yeah, you need to work on that zipper, bro. Leave that man and shepherd alone, bro. You got Ben Kevin alone.
Some places you get arrested.
You walk right here, you know. Hey. And you have, you know, depends on what's going on, you got some slippage, bro. You don't need that in your life, bro. You might as well put them pants up, man. Do what you got to do.
They start dragging when you get older now, so watch out.
Mr. Charles, your question, sir.
Oh, DeMaurice didn't ask that? He didn't answer.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. DeMaurice. I'm sorry, man.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Hell,
I'm sorry,
wait a minute.
I'm sorry, DeMaurice. I'm sorry, bro. Your response to your question, man. Forgive me, please.
Oh, no problem. I used to, but, man, it seems like I always make a joke of it, or if I do something embarrassing, it's like I laugh it off, or if I'm around people, I'll tell a good joke or be sarcastic around it or something like that, and it just blows off. But it amazes me how so many people, even adults, are still so easily embarrassed. Like, oh, my God, you know, this is so embarrassing, and you turn red and stuff like that. It's like, for me, I just go with the flow. Well, whatever's happening, and if it makes somebody smile or laugh or something like that, so be it. It's just a part of life, basically, to me.
Cool. Mr. Charles, your question, sir.
Okay, so when is the last time that you actually were really mad and angry about something?
Wow.
Yeah, I can go first.
It might have been a week.
Think about it. Oh, okay.
No, it might have been a week ago. No, my anger doesn't last that long. Your response, DeMaurice?
This morning when I was finishing up watching the series Vip on Prime Video. If you haven't watched that series, oh my God. Just thinking how it relates to now. It's done in the 50s, I believe. And it's about this black family who moves into Compton, which is all white at the particular time. And it'll make you think, it'll make you mad, because after I finished watching about 5 o'clock this morning, getting through all 10 episodes, I turned my phone off. I ain't turn it on until about 3 o'clock this afternoon. I ain't want to talk to nobody. I don't want to see nothing. I had to be by myself for a while to kind of think of all the stuff that was happening in this film and how people would justify oppression or justify what they do to black folks.
Mr. Charles.
It's probably been about a week. Because after a while, now I try to remember about things that really don't matter, that should not make me mad, unless it's something like that. So, yeah, about a week ago.
Let me throw a question out to you, gentlemen, because I bought the Sunday newspaper here to get some coupons out of it, and I saw an article right on the front page, just at the bottom, but it was saying how, because Pfizer, you know, Yale was here for the most part, Yale and Pfizer want to do a study on 6-month-old babies, giving them the virus injection. I want to give you guys an opinion on it. Before I say that, what I found to be interesting, before I come to you first, Mr. Jones, they were giving out to Connecticut. They wanted to give out the vaccination to teenagers at school. And they wanted to do it to the 16, 17, and 18-year-olds at the public schools here. And they offered them, the parents were signed off on it. It was the Johnson's one. And it was interesting. Just as they did it that Friday and Saturday, and that following Sunday and Monday, that's when Johnson's got pulled off the market for clocks. So I don't know. I'll give mine in a little bit. But hearing that, basically they want to do research on 6 months old with the virus. Any reaction you have to that?
Yeah. I don't think they should do something like that until this vaccine is definitely secure and they feel comfortable about it. I mean, we as adults make decisions and whatnot, and a lot of us are we're on the other end of life. But my point of it is, with a young baby that might have a long time to live, something to that effect, unless it's something where they cannot, they just, it's really going to be a risk to their health not to have it. I think you can wait on that until you make sure you have more conclusive results that show that it does work and it's going to be beneficial to them.
Mr. Dimley, it's your response, huh?
Yeah, I think they definitely should wait a year or two to see how things are shaking out with folks that are getting the vaccines now. And because usually it takes that long to kind of get more data. And the longer you wait, the more data you get on how this vaccine will affect the body. I think when babies are just developing between the ages of 0 and 4, and so many things are happening to their bodies, their minds, things of that sort, you don't want to kind of rush in and try to do an experiment or try to draw data from that. But you'll have some parents who will okay it, and if that's their decision, they want to do that, that's you know, on them. But I think that the company should really kind of wait until that, because they're already talking about booster shots, and I know it's I'm eligible tomorrow to go and get the shot. But this thing came on real quickly. They put this, you know, the vaccines together quickly. I think it's the quickest ever. And you have this technology to do so. I understand that. But you want to pump the brakes a little bit and make sure it's the right thing for everybody.
Yeah, you spoke of booster shots. I was reading the other day where Pfizer's CEO was saying that I guess the shots that you take are only good for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So after your shot, within 6 months to a year, you got to get shot again. And I want to believe that in order to basically keep, they're going to say this at some point, to keep the virus at bay, you have to be getting shot the rest of your life. That's what's going to have to happen. You know, I know there's probably some fear involved, but to me, when you start going gunning for the babies, what's going on here, realistically? What is really going on? I think that kind of speaks volumes in terms of what's going on with the shot in general. And I don't, you know, have my own opinion on it, and I don't knock anyone that gets it and feel they need it, but it's just something about this, man, that just doesn't seem right. And it's not a matter of, you know, some people say, well, because of my race, I don't trust. Yeah, there's some part of that, but I'm not even saying that. It's just something about it just doesn't seem like it's just kosher to me. And here again, you're going to probably be getting shots for quite some time. You know, quite some time. There's always going to be that level of fear they're going to project to you. I remember my son, who's 19 now, he had to get a physical. I think at the time, he was 13 or 14. And he just came out that time, just before then. They wanted to make sure, because young girls, were getting HPVs. So the doctor had been doing the physical. And it wasn't necessary. It was a doctor that at that point. It wasn't actually his common doctor. The doctor was away. So the guy said, yeah, okay, I'm going to go get the HPV. I said, for what? He said, well, we're giving it. I said, well, you're not giving it to my son. He said, well, if young males are having sex, I said, here again, you're not giving it to my son. I don't care what you do to anyone else. He's not taking a shot based on something that young girls are coming up with. I say that to say that sometimes you just got to be careful. You really just got to be careful. I don't knock their truth. I don't knock their learning, whatever the case may be. But sometimes they're quick to do things and shoot and just basically with no real rationale behind it. And with smart people, we have to really focus and use our common sense. Just because they're saying it, because it's on CNN, it's on ABC, whatever the case may be, it doesn't make it great. I hope and pray. I really hope and pray that these shots have no ill side effects, because no one talks about that. All they talk about, I got my second shot, and I felt a little something. You know how many stuff that's been put on the market lately when it comes to pharmaceutical stuff, that the side effects can kill you more than what you're shooting it for, what you're taking it for? And I laugh, because you look at some of these TV commercials. But it's one thing that you have not heard anyone talk about is about these vaccines, the side effects that can happen later on. Heck, like it's a non-issue. not. They just say that you may feel some symptoms by the second shot or the first shot, but no one talks about that. And throughout all this, I've heard from the different pharmaceutical companies that are doing it, and you hear from CDC, where's the FDA? Have they ever said anything? Have they made a comment? Have they said anything about what's going on? Nothing. So I find that to be a little interesting. It's just my take on it, gentlemen. We got about 4 minutes before we get out of here. I'm going to come to you real quick, Mr. Reese, because I don't know if you had a chance to talk to your dad, man, but I called him with some specific advice, and I told him never again to let you, Mr. Charles, put him into a bracket, a play bracket.
And you didn't tell me the response he had. He said you were just pulling your nuts out of the sand, and now you want to talk.
No, he didn't say that. He said that to hear that. You said you didn't call me when it was football time.
Now you want to talk.
I did hear you say in the conversation, don't take any wooden nickels. I'm like, man, get out of here.
Yeah, don't take any wooden nickels. That's his advice to me every time I get off the phone. Don't take no wooden nickels. Don't let anybody fool you. There's a history behind that, too. That's a history behind the wooden nickels. That's because they used to try to give the Native Americans, instead of giving them really real cash, they would give them wooden nickels, which worth anything. So that's why they have that old saying down there that don't take any wooden nickels. Don't let anybody fool you.
Ooh, okay, that's pretty deep right there. Gentlemen, what we're going to do here, since we have a little time left, we're going to take a minute. Something that you may want to talk about, Mr. Charles, that kind of might have been grinding your gears a little bit. What you got, sir?
Yeah, I guess my whole point of this is just trying to figure out the whole, you mentioned about the vaccine, is just really understanding that even if you don't get the vaccine, that you still need to take precautions and take care of yourself, because some people out here now just acting as if with the vaccines here, and then they don't need to wear a mask, they don't need to do anything, they just need to just live life like they were living it before. But again, dude, people die, man, they dying. They are dying. I don't understand that, man. I mean, granted, you could do what the hell you want to, but I just had a relative that was that's almost in denial about it, and come to find out that he had COVID, diagnosed with COVID, and had pneumonia. I'm like, shit, man. You almost, I mean, what else you need, bro? For real.
Yeah. Wow. I think he was cooped up for so long, man. They want to get back to a normal way of living. You admit it, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, it's, you know, I know babies take vaccines and stuff like that, you know, in different phases. But, yeah, with this one, we need to really kind of pause it a little bit if we can to make sure the babies will be cool when this time, because you got the smallpox, you got all different types of vaccines that have come out over the years to keep the smallpox disease from decimating the population. So I think they're looking at it from that standpoint. But, yeah, put a pause on it, give it a little bit more time, and then, you know, hopefully things will be cool.
Real quick, gentlemen, I'll make this short. They had a video that came out. Remember Donald for the Rams? The guy was saying that he beat him up. Come to find out.
Yeah.
In the video, Donald was breaking the fight up. You going to turn around and try to get money out of him?
He probably get whooped up so much. He didn't know who was hitting him. He know he didn't hit. Only recognizable person.
That was so funny.
Aaron O'Donnell.
It
was him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Y'all,
I was like, really,
what you did. We get together next week. In the meantime, y'all stay strong. Then you gonna stay black. Keep it going, keep it going, keep it going, keep it going.